Welcome to the podcast series, Planning for Autism in Communities and Schools, with Dr. Tina Fletcher, Professor of Occupational Therapy at Texas Woman's University. Along with many neurotypical and neurodiverse colleagues, Dr. Fletcher has worked with community agencies and schools to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. And now, Dr. Tina Fletcher.
Hello. In this podcast, we will briefly discuss two things. The first one is autism and how perceptions of it have changed over time. And the second one is addressing social and environmental factors in the community before, during, and after community events so that autistic individuals can better participate. So, if you operate a community setting or host events, have you ever wondered how to create a welcoming experience for visitors with autism? This can be a daunting task. Familiarizing yourself with how people with autism perceive and interact with the world and what makes their experiences different from neurotypical visitors is a great first step. Autism can be experienced in many ways, and it's often referred to as autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. Over time, there's been a trend away from thinking that having autism means something is wrong or that it's a bad medical condition. While people have long described autism before their condition, such as saying, a person with autism, now many insist that autism is deeply connected with their sense of self, and they say, an autistic person instead. Using this way of thinking, it's easy to see why many insist that autism is a difference to be celebrated. While people's perceptions of autism change over time, one thing is certain. Autism is usually typified by differences in communication and social skills and different perceptions of the senses around each of us. Let's think of some examples. A person with autism might not use words to communicate, but instead rely on images. They might also respond to social situations with repetitive body movements or sounds instead of following the usual rules of social interaction. A person with autism might also have strong reactions to sounds or smells that other people don't even notice. For community partners who want to create good experiences for people with autism, there are certain things that can support communication, social, and sensory differences. And when these are addressed, people with autism and their families report being able to stay longer and having a great time at events. Some also feel like they are less likely to have outbursts that interfere with other people's experiences. In fact, autism supports are beneficial to many people, and they don't detract from anyone's visit. Community members can also count on help from occupational therapy practitioners, also known as OTs or OTPs. As professionals dedicated to support participation of people with differences and disabilities, they can help community partners prioritize the autism-friendly supports that can be put in place. And you're going to love this, eliminate the hard extra work behind creating accommodations that really aren't all that helpful. So let's look at some of the ways that community venues and events can be optimized for people with autism. Community venues can put plans in place before people with autism visit, including, are you ready? I've got a laundry list for you. Doing an autism friendliness audit. And that's really a process of checking for communication, social, and sensory supports. You can also map an autism friendly route through your venue. You can look at signage and add signage that includes photographs, graphics, and clear, simple words. Another thing that's a little different but is definitely helpful is educating your staff and any volunteers who are going to be working at the event or in your place. While you're at it, you might want to consider designing ways that you can collect visitor feedback. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But keep in mind that we just said that some people with autism don't communicate with words. So you have to think in different ways to collect that feedback. You can also enlist the help of people who do feel comfortable and know about working with people with autism, such as occupational therapists and students, special educators, or speech and language pathologists. And one of our favorite strategies is to post information on the internet prior to the event. And the information that you post can include things such as etiquette, rules, expectations, and even success stories. And we'll save talking about success stories for another podcast. But a lot of the things I just discussed are things that may be implied, and also invisible, but they're definitely a factor, and that's especially true for etiquette. Now, let's think about things that can be put into place for people during visits. One of our favorites is to provide special ways for visitors with autism to check in. It may be a different place, it may be a different time, or it may be in a different location within the venue. You can use signage that has a variety of ways of communicating, which really is helpful to anyone, especially people who are not comfortable using the English language. So you can use photographs or icons or graphic images. And another one of our favorite things to do is to create temporary or permanent sensory havens. I hold that thought for later. And then the last thing that you can do during the event is you can actually design autism-friendly activity stations. And trust me when I say the internet is bursting with ideas for those stations. Now let's think about after the visit. What can you do to learn about what you have just hosted and then how you want to make plans for your next event? First of all, and most importantly, you want to use visitor feedback to develop those future events. You can also use your own feedback. Write up a visit summary, an event summary of both the successes and the needs for improvement, because sometimes it's a long time before your next special event and you may even forget some of the details. And then the last thing you can do is start thinking about writing grant applications and seeking funding for future plans, because you may realize that you need more manpower, you need more visual supports, you'd like to purchase some things that you feel like are useful. If you will consider those grant applications right after you have your events, they'll be fresher and more targeted to the things that you actually can benefit from. So planning for autism is an ongoing process, and it relies a lot on teamwork, especially hearing multiple points of view. And, okay, this one's going to be difficult for someone, being willing to discard old ideas while inventing new ones. So community partners should celebrate their efforts and continue the collaborations and stay informed on the latest trends in autism research and activities.
You've been listening to Dr. Tina Fletcher. Thank you to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board who made this podcast series possible. And special thanks for many community partners with and without autism who steadily work to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. We'll see you next time.